your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am chatting in this segment with Mark Chandler. Mark is the managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the blog Mark to Market. We are going to spend a bit more time looking at the general markets, really taking a big picture look at what is happening for markets and some other sectors that are pretty critical. Mark, let's get into some of the news events from this week that contributed to the market moves. We first had Jerome Powell speak. We actually had a lot of other Fed presidents speak, but it was really Powell's comments that seemed to move markets the most and move them down. And we also had the U.S. non-farms payroll out that added more jobs than what was expected, 379,000 jobs added. Let's start with Powell's speech, though. Powell really did just confirm that the Fed is still going to be standing, for the most part, on the sidelines. No policy changes right now. What's important to note about what Powell had to say?
Yeah, I think that the most important takeaway from Powell is that the rise in U.S. interest rates is not a major concern to Fed officials, which means they're not going to do anything about the increase in yields. Like some people are talking about yield curve control or Operation Twist, where they buy more of the long end and sell the short end. I think that Powell's pretty clear, and I don't think that they haven't changed their tune, which I think alone represented some concern for the markets. Here, in the last few months, we've had the Treasury have these huge stimulus plans. We've got another one going. The market has revised up Q1 GDP, revising up all of this year's outlook for the U.S. economy. And the Fed says, and Powell says specifically, that we're a long way away from reaching our goals. And so what this means is that even as the economy, and we're talking about, you've seen some of these GDP Now forecasts, it's anywhere between, say, 6 and 8.5% GDP growth. And the Fed says they're going to still be buying $120 billion worth of bonds every month. And so I think that in effect, the market works something like this. The Federal Reserve says, the chairman says, you haven't reached our pain threshold yet. Even though the volatility caught our attention, you haven't, the yield level hasn't, it doesn't bother us. And that is like waving a flag. And the market says, if we haven't found your pain threshold yet, we're going to fish for it. And I think that's what we're in the process broadly of doing, fishing for the central bank's pain threshold. When do they say the rise in yields is problematic or counterproductive?
Now, this rise in yields, it's come from the long end, and usually the Fed controls more of the short end. That's what has a lot of people talking about some sort of yield curve control announcement. But Powell hasn't said that they're going to do that. So where does that balance lie here, Mark?
Yeah, so I think that in some ways, you know, the steepness of the yield curve is one way to think about the profitability of lending. And so this steepness of the yield curve, and the yield curve is not just about the long end rising, but we have some technical issues relating. I think we talked about this before about the Treasury reducing their cash position at the Federal Reserve. And what's happening is that some short-term U.S. interest rates go negative. For example, we don't often think about this, especially on the retail side, but it's called a repo and general collateral. And so what you're looking at is if you're a bank, you hold treasuries, and you want to swap those treasuries for cash. Because the collateral rate is negative, you get paid to do that. And that's just, I use that just as an example to illustrate how steep that yield curve really is. The very short end has gone negative. It wavers back and forth, and some instruments are still negative. And so I think that the Federal Reserve, again, I don't think it's too upset by the yield curve. Remember, a year ago, 2 years ago, before COVID, people were concerned that the yield curve was too flat. And now they're concerned it's too steep. And I think that steepness, not only is the Fed saying this, but we'll hear it again next week, I think, from the Bank of Canada. And that is that the rise in yields, it reflects market optimism about what's going to happen when we've got herd immunity, or when we can go back to whatever normal is. And I think that partly it's a self-serving explanation, and partly because it basically says that officials are right. We're doing the right things for people to become more optimistic. On the other hand, one of the key events last week that you didn't mention as we talk about the Fed and U.S. jobs data, something else that happened just before Powell spoke last Thursday is OPEC surprised us. OPEC, many people like myself, thought OPEC, well, of course they're going to boost output. Oil prices were north of $60 a barrel. The OPEC Plus had cut 7 million barrels of oil from production. Of course they were going to let some bleed back into the market. But lo and behold, OPEC says no. They're not going to boost production. And so oil prices jumped by about 4% or so, and now they're jumping even further today. We're talking about $65 a barrel, more or less, for oil. And I find that, simplistic as this may sound, rising oil prices fuel American expectations for inflation, measured by the break-even and those kinds of things. So when Powell spoke and didn't express much concern about the rise in yields, he was really pushing on an open door, if you will, and that door had already been opened that day by OPEC's decision. So you've got the Federal Reserve, like other central banks, not so concerned about the level of interest rates. They specifically say that they don't target the long-term rates. They're concerned about financial conditions. So you have Powell, you've got the OPEC, and then you had what was a jobs report that was roughly twice what the market expected.
Let's dive into that jobs report, because in the next segment, I will be covering more of the energy and oil sector. But that jobs report, 379,000 jobs added. You and I were talking about this before recording, and there's some nuances within this number that we do need to understand. Please share with us what you're seeing within this jobs number.
Sure. The jobs number was very strong. The headline, 379,000. The market expectations were creeping up. We were around 200,000. But we know that the government sector lost jobs. The private sector itself gained about 465,000 jobs. This is a very strong number, like I say, well above expectations. But when you dig below it and you look at which sectors benefited, there's one sector that stands out, the leisure and hospitality sector. And that reflects the reopening in some places of the economy. That sector created 355,000 jobs. It's an amazing number, because we're not fully there yet, right? We haven't really fully opened up, even though some small pockets have. This is pretending, if you will, or suggesting what's in store for us. Perhaps when we get this month's report, there's already talk of over 1 million jobs. On the other hand, when you listen to what Powell says and what other central banks, not just in the U.S., but around the world, say, they're still concerned about the labor market. In the U.S., both Powell and Yellen have talked about the unemployment rate really being closer to 10% than the 6.2% that was reported today. So maybe another way to think about the damage of the labor market, because we don't want to confuse ourselves thinking the economy is the same as the labor market. We can have jobless recoveries. And here's what it looks like. The number of people who are who've been unemployed for a long term, which is 27 weeks, stands at 4.1 million. That's up 125,000 last month. So even though we had a lot of job creation, that's really good. And the other side of it shows us the longer term damage, and that is a rising number of people that are unemployed for a long period of time. Now, so we have 4.1 million on this long-term unemployed. This is up still 3 million from a year ago. And so if you ask, will the employment data, so strong, so much stronger than expected, will this change the Fed's view? And I say probably not. We'll see. The Fed meets on March 17th. And I think that this jobs number does not really alleviate concerns that the labor market remains scarred from this pandemic that we're still maybe winding down, but we're still in the middle of.
Okay, let's talk about market reactions then, because this week especially, we are starting to see some weakness in the markets. You and I are recording this on Friday, and it does look like these markets have bounced back from some of the weakness just today, but overall, I am seeing just simply more weakness. But that's then going hand in hand with what looks like, or at least optimism around the economy, kind of different from last year. Last year, the markets were really good and the economy sucked. And then this year, the economy is projected to get better and now the markets are looking weak. This does all tie into expectations on Fed easiness, but what's your balance here of these markets and how they are starting to look weak again?
Yeah, so I think that a couple of factors, considerations are important. One is that perhaps we're just at this inflection point where the market is, you know, one of the things when you think about the valuation, these fair value models of the stocks, you're really discounting the earnings stream. And interest rates is the discounting factor. And so when interest rates are low, the discounting function is low. And it could justify higher multiples. But now, as interest rates are rising, people have to readjust their models. And I think that there's this rotation taking place. And so those stocks that benefited from the very low interest rates, like the tech sector, people are liquidating those. But what are they buying? Well, I'd say two sectors. One is banks. Remember that yield curve, that steepness of the yield curve, which I suggest is one metric of the profitability of lend, has all of a sudden has become much more profitable for the banks to do their business. And so we've seen the bank indexes, individual banks do very well in this environment. And the other thing that people like, I think, is sort of a Dennis Gartman, who you know pretty well up there in Canada. He had this saying once that said, told me, you want to, at some parts of the cycle, you want to buy things that hurt when you drop on your feet. Bonds do not hurt when you drop on your feet. Copper does. Iron ore does. So we're seeing some profit taking the commodities, and some of the mutual funds that invest in commodities are seeing some outflows. But in general, I'd say that's been where the rotation's been, out of tech, into financials, into commodities or commodities or materials, that kind of sector. But I think that what we lose sight of, as people like ourselves who watch the market every day, is that yes, there has been a rise in interest rates, but should last March really be our base case? We're talking about today, as we're speaking here, we've got the 10-year U.S. bond yield at 1.55%. CPI that's coming out next week in the U.S. is likely to be about 1.4%, 1.5%. Nominal interest rates are still low. So Germany, they've seen about a 28 basis point rise in the last couple of months. We're talking about minus 30 basis points. In Germany, we're talking about in Italy, 75 basis point yield, half of what it is in the U.S. So I think that while interest rates have risen, we're not really at high levels yet. They would really choke off an economy, choke off profitability for businesses. And so because of that, I sort of think that this correction, that's all it is, may have some more room to run. And like you say, it's almost like the reverse of last year. Weak economy, strong stock market. Now, strong economy and weaker stock market. You know, our NASDAQ has sold off now 10% from its record high that it made just a few weeks ago. And so we are in this area which, whether it's for people who like measure these things kind of in a correction, my sense is that it's still too early to pick a bottom to it, partly because I'm thinking about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. I said a month from now, we might get a million job growth, non-farm payrolls. We haven't seen, you know, after we get past this fiscal stimulus the U.S. is talking about, close to probably past this coming weekend, that we're going to turn our attention to the infrastructure. And during the campaign, Biden promised over $1 trillion infrastructure program. There's some estimate that it might go up as high as $2 to $3 trillion. So I think that's too early to really pick the bottom of these. And I think that the fact that so many people are picking a bottom to it suggests to me that hasn't been a capitulation, as painful as this has been.
All of this just screams to me a restart trade, an economic restart trade, a steepening yield curve, money flowing into some of the banks, base metals and commodities still doing pretty well, especially with the potential of an infrastructure bill, even as energy prices continue to move higher. Where does this all leave gold then? Because gold, again, weak this week, and actually broke below 1700.
Yeah, huh? Gold is really a heartbreak for a lot of people. We think that gold is fueled by inflation or fueled by, you think, sell-off in stocks. Yeah, it should be good for gold. But I think that gold is a sort of a strange character in general. I think that we should be looking, even though to me gold is terribly oversold, as it got below that $1,700 level, I look for a small bounce next week, but I'm not convinced the low is in place yet in gold, partly because what's the driver for the sell-off? I don't think it's about inflation per se. I think it's higher nominal yields. Partly when I turned bullish gold, thinking it would go to 2,000, we were around 1,400. And I thought that because I think the interest rates were going to continue to fall, and they, of course, they fell much further than I could have ever expected or imagined. But that interest rate, the falling interest rates, makes gold look relatively more attractive because gold does not generate a yield. And so now that yields are rising, and I don't think we shouldn't be picking a top to the yields or like a bottom to bonds. And that just tells me that gold could have a little bit of a bounce, maybe at 1720, 1730, something like that. But I think that the next leg down brings us probably closer to 1600, which is a psychological level. There's some chart levels there as well as some retracement levels. So I think that we need to be careful of gold. For me, I think it's just a question of the discipline of what is driving it, what's driving the market we're looking at. I happen to think that interest rates are driving gold. And because interest rates are rising, I think that's negative for gold.
It's as simple as that, and it usually is, unfortunately. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. It's another crazy and wild week, but very interesting to see the way that these markets look like they're going to close up for the day. And actually, some of the swings we've seen have been fairly positive. Maybe that buy the dip mentality is still very prevalent in U.S. markets. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. I'll chat with you again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.